There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
All right, welcome to a brand new week. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at RadioOrNot.com every Monday through Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 3 to 5 out on the West Coast. Doing the internet thing. Yeah, since the demise of Air America Radio. It is now over a month, and I got to tell you about this letter I received today. In case you can't tell, you really can't see all the mess here in my studio. Just when I think I'm digging out from under it, the piles stack up again. You know, it is something in my, I guess it's genetic. I don't know. So I am a creditor of Air America because they owe me $4,200. Again, my fault. It really is, because I got pretty lax on my invoices because I wasn't a full-time actual employee of Air America. I was an independent contractor, so I would send them an invoice after each week of shows. I would have to send them an invoice, and basically what I would do is let them build up for a few weeks and send them an invoice every 2 or 3 weeks. So I'd, instead of a lot of smaller checks, I'd get a few bigger checks. And I was planning on just, you know, at the end of the week, in January, sending an invoice. It would have been January 22nd. I was waiting until the end of the week. Well, you know, January 21st, that Thursday, the plug was pulled. And yeah, they owed me $4,200 at the time. And yes, it hurts. So anyway, I get these letters from the United States Bankruptcy Court, Southern District of New York. And it tells me, you know, note to creditors and other parties in interest of trustees intended sale and all that. Well, now I get a notice that there is going to be I just got this in the mail yesterday or Saturday, actually. The big sale of all the Air America equipment on March 25th. I'm bummed because, it's going to be March 25th at 11 a.m. and the property may be inspected that morning from 9 to 11. Well, I'm actually going to be in New York March 17th through 20th for the New Media Seminar Conference, a big talk radio convention. But I'm not going to be there on the 25th. And you know what? There's a lot of great equipment up at those Air America studios. I'm sure I could pick out $4,200 worth of stuff, although I know it doesn't work that way. But anyway, I sent this law firm or the auction house an email to see if when I'm up there, I can look at what's there and maybe make some notes and maybe I can get in on the auction via telephone. But they haven't responded to me. Oh well. I'm not holding my breath, by the way, on getting the money that Air America owes me. But you know, one of the things that is up for auction is the URL, airamerica.com. Now, wouldn't that be interesting if we could launch a new internet radio network using that name? You know, there's a lot of good, really good internet broadcasters. I actually like the name Radio or Not better than Air America. I always thought Air America was kind of a lousy name because people think of, you know, Air America from back in the day. Anyway, a topic for another day. Although we may get into that a little bit with our first guest of the evening who does a radio show every Friday with Angie Coiro out of San Francisco. But we'll talk in a little bit about that before we get to that because Laffy is going to join us in a few minutes. A couple of other stories I just want to bring you up to date on. Actually, before I get to the stories, let me tell you a little bit about this weekend. Because Friday night, I went to see Lily Tomlin. Can I just tell you how awesome she was? Yeah, she was playing this little theater here in, well, not here. I live in Miami, but my boyfriend lives up in Coral Springs. He had bought tickets before we went out of town, not realizing he was going to still be out of town. So I took my oldest best friend in the world, Eva, to go see Lily Tomlin at the Coral Springs Center for the Performing Arts. And Lily Tomlin, on the ticket, it said Classic Lily Tomlin. And sure enough, she pulled out all those old characters. If I tell you, she was amazing, so funny. You know, and she did Edith Thann, she did all the old characters. And I was waiting for Ernestine. Remember the phone operator? And even here, because I don't have a call screener or board op any longer. And when I call people, you know, it's just, it comes with the age. When I'm calling somebody and we can hear the phone ringing in the background, one ringy dingy, it just, you know, from all those years ago, comes back. Anyway, so towards the end of the show, Lily Tomlin goes into her Ernestine character. And then I'm the worst at telling jokes, so, you know, bear with me here. And I'm not going to even try, but I'll sort of paraphrase what she did. She went on to say how she doesn't work for the phone company anymore. Nope. She's moved on. And now she works for a health insurance company. Now, if you remember the premise of Ernestine, her whole thing was how she delighted in not helping the customers. It just being, you know, the bitch phone operator, right? Well, now she is the queen bitch customer service representative for the health insurance company and delights in telling people that their claim is denied, that they're not covered, you know, basically, you know, get sick and die. Too bad. Huh. I fell out of my chair laughing. But the good news, aside from what a great show it was, is we get into the theater. And we got there just as the lights were going down. And I see the woman sitting in the next seat is somebody that I know. She was the best friend of one of my dear friend's mothers. But somebody that I know from out in California, to show you how weird a coincidence it was. And the woman she was with went back 30 years with Lily Tomlin. Her husband, see if you can follow me here, her husband used to be in the fur business. And 30 years ago, Lily Tomlin bought 2 furs from her husband. And somehow she got a hold of Lily Tomlin's people who said, oh, have her come back and say hello. So they had an entree into going backstage. So, of course, my friend Eva and I had to go with them. And we did. And Lily Tomlin couldn't have been any more gracious. I mean, just everything you'd expect from her. And I told her when she went into Ernestine and it turned out that Ernestine was now working for the health insurance company, I nearly fell out of my chair. And I explained to her who I was and I used to work at Air America. And she's like, oh, I loved Air America. Oh my God. Oh my God. And so, a long story short, we talked and I said, I'd love to have her on the show. And I think she's going to do it. They're going to be back in California, I believe today or tomorrow. I will be calling them. Lily Tomlin is now on damages. I spent a good part of my a good part of my weekend catching up on this season of Damages, in which that's the TV series on FX with Glenn Close, with the attorney. And this season, the storyline is about a Bernie Madoff character, and Lily Tomlin plays plays the Bernie Madoff's wife's character, and she's brilliant. Brilliant. She's so, you know, the serious actress. But anyway, Lily told me the story when I mentioned the whole falling out of my chair over Ernestine. She told me that she actually was, I guess, at a fundraiser for Barbara Boxer just a week or two ago and did that Ernestine bit. And Barbara Boxer was dying and said, you've got to come and do that on the floor of the Senate. And I'll tell you, yes, she does. So hopefully she'll come on the show with me sometime in the next week or two. Hopefully she will, maybe even, you know, do a little bit of the Ernestine bit for us, because I explained to her how that, you know, healthcare is my pet issue these days, as it should be yours. All right. Because, you know, look, I didn't watch a whole lot of the Olympics. And in the little bit I heard of Ed Schultz's radio show today, they were talking about, the hockey game last night. I'm not a hockey fan. I couldn't care less. So I didn't watch it. But, you know, I had posted a thing on Facebook, a picture after the first game. I guess the U.S. beat Canada in hockey in the first round or something. And there was a picture of a Canadian holding up a sign that said, "At least we have health care." I thought that was comically ironic, you know, very funny, sadly funny, but funny nonetheless. So yeah, I'll go with that. I'd rather have the health care than the hockey victory any day. Turns out, I guess they got both. All right. The latest though in the healthcare fight news is that there is, regardless of the fact that, President Obama and, Robert Gibbs and, all the powers that be in the Democratic Party are proclaiming the public option still dead. This letter, the Bennett letter, Senator Bennett from Colorado, we talked about this last week, who has authored this letter to Harry Reid urging him to allow a vote to bring the public option to the reconciliation vote, now has 30 signatures on it. Yep, five more Democrats, including Dick Durbin, say they support a public option through reconciliation. Dick Durbin, senator from Illinois, through his communications director, Joe Shoemaker, said, "Senator Durbin has long been a supporter of the public option. I don't know whether the votes exist in the Senate right now, but if the House version of the public option came up for a vote in reconciliation, Senator Durbin would vote yes." Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington State, said, "I've been consistently supportive of a public option so that Washington's families and businesses have choices in their health care options, and so insurance companies are finally forced to compete for the business of the American people. Nothing has changed that support. I don't know whether the votes exist in the Senate right now, but if the public option came up for a vote as we move ahead with reform, including under reconciliation, I would vote yes." Jeff Bingaman of New Mexico, Ben Cardin of Maryland, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota all add their signatures to the Bennett letter and their voices to this campaign to get, you know, to bring the public option up for a vote. Now, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, who's really taken the ball and run with this, and you can find them at boldprogressives.org, they have put together an online ad targeting senators in at least 10 senators who should be for the public option, but have so far refused to sign on to this letter. The first up is Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa. Now, Tom Harkin is interesting because he's the guy who now chairs the HELP committee, the one that Ted Kennedy chaired. And, you know, Ted Kennedy was the guy pushing for health care reform. Well, Tom Harkin was lampooned by Jon Stewart last week for previously saying, and this is a direct quote, "I'd say right now we have well over 55 votes for a public option, but we need 60. But now he's sort of saying, well, 50 don't even exist. Again, I think there's more than meets the eye here. Because last week I spoke with a guy named Miles Mogadescu, I think was his name, who wrote a piece for Huffington Post in which he linked to two New York Times articles back this summer that told of a White House deal with the for-profit hospital lobby in which basically the White House promised there would be no public option in the final plan. Now, you might remember a similar deal, this time though with Big Pharma, that got a lot more media attention, that killed Byron Dorgan's prescription reimportation bill, right? It was all because of that White House deal. So I think we need to call some more attention to that. Anyway, we will get back to that. But yeah, I think public option might still be perhaps alive and well. All right. You know what? There's a lot more going on. We will get to it, but I want to bring in our first guest of the evening. And of course, I didn't queue up her phone number here, so bear with me. The person we're going to talk to, well, we're going to call her Laffy. Now, if you are not Lassie, Laffy, you know what? I'm so remiss. I got a late start today and I haven't even gone into either chat room, but I am here. You know, we do a chat. I've got a chat going on the Ustream webpage. Hi, everybody. And, so if you're watching the show via, video at radioornot.com, there is a chat there. Although the Ustream chat is pretty limited. It only allows so many people in at a time. So Tom Hartman, the wonderful, amazing Tom Hartman, also allows me the use of his chat room. And I'm always logged in there during the show, except I haven't done it yet. .com. So if you go to tomhartman.com, you'll find a group of wonderful people in that chat as well. And the numbers there are pretty much unlimited. So you can, if you want to join in the chat while we're talking, feel free. And while I get those things up and running, let me now call Gotta Laugh. And yes, that's what we call her, Gotta Laugh. She is one of the proprietors at Miles Mogulescu. Thank you, Joni, in the Tom Hartman chat. That was his name. Hi, everybody. Sorry I'm late. Okay, so hello.
Hi.
There you are. And she's laughing. I love that.
I was doing my Ernestine impression for you. I sounded like Susan Collins.
But you know what? Nobody heard you because I had the pot, the volume on the phone down. So they didn't hear you. Well, let me give you the official introduction. Gotta Laugh is with us. That's the name she uses online at Twitter. If you are a Twitterer, a tweeter, I guess is the proper terminology. That's how I met Gotta Laugh recently, because I've recently become just a Twitter freak. That's GOTTALAFF, a must follow on Twitter. And through that, I found her website, which is thepoliticalcarnival.net. And it is just, it's a brilliant, why am I hearing, just, I'm hearing a lot of, oh my goodness, everything is like exploding at once. Hold on, my cell phone started ringing. Oh, that's what the noise was. It was my cell phone ringing. Okay, we are here now. So anyway, so Gotta Laugh is an omnipresent presence on Twitter and at the website thepoliticalcarnival.net. And I got to tell you, Laffy, yeah. I love both your constant stream of information on Twitter and your website as well. And so I want to talk a little bit about that and about things that are going on in the world and how you approach it all.
Well, but I approach it quickly.
I guess.
It's a fast-paced site. Every time I post on the site, I go ahead and post the same thing to Twitter. And I have the reason I do a lot is because as I read stories, I'm impressed with them somehow. By the way, I'm getting an echo.
Oh,
are you hearing it?
I am not hearing it. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. If I have weird timing, you'll know why.
All right. I'm going to try to fix it on this end, see if this helps at all.
But anyway, the way I end up doing stories is if it affects me emotionally, I put it up.
Okay.
And if it's newsworthy, of course, I put it up. But I don't always put up every story that happens to be newsworthy.
Well, if you did, I would think you would be. Oh, now I know what's not working. If you did, you would be going nonstop, 24/7. But you pretty much do that. You run thepoliticalcarnival.net with another blogger. Who is your partner?
Patty.
With Patty.
We originally started with Cliff Schechter, and he ended up getting a job in Columbus, Ohio, working with the government of Ohio. And so he had to pull out of the blog due to a conflict of interest.
Okay, now Cliff Schechter, I interviewed only once, and it was during my days at Air America when he had a book called The Real McCain, You know what? It might have been before Air America, when I was still at WINZ in Miami, actually, now that I think about it, that exposed the truth about John McCain. So, so that's when you started the politicalcarnival.net is with Cliff Schechter. And so, but what is your background? Have you always been a political, type person?
No, I used to hate politics. I was an actress and a writer for television. I did a lot of stage. I did improvisation with a lot of really cool improvers like Robin Williams and John Ritter. And I started getting interested in politics heavily during the 2000 election when I was terrified about Bush getting elected, which he never was, but that's another story.
Yes, <it is. laughs>
And I started getting into it, and I discovered blogs. I think it could be that some main news site linked to one blog, and then I realized, oh, my God, what are these things called blogs? What is that?
Mm-hmm.
And the echo's gone. Thank you.
Oh, good, good, good.
And I discovered Cliff, and we started. I emailed him. He's really funny, and he was the only blogger I noticed that went for humor. And since comedy is my specialty, I was immediately attracted to his writing. And he answered my email, and we wrote for 2 solid years to each other. And then he started his own blog, which wasn't the Political Carnival. Actually, we hooked up with Brave New Films.
Oh, wow.
With Robert Greenwald.
Yeah. Brilliant.
And originally Cliff had it was Cliff Schechter blog, then we hooked up with Robert Greenwald, and then we ended up with Political Carnival shortly after that. And I was terrified to write political. It's not my thing at all. I'm a comedy writer. I do sketch comedy. And so I was really, he dragged me kicking and screaming, and I told the readers, listen, I do comedy here. I'll just sort of dabble in politics. And they really liked it. So I just kept going, and I got addicted to it.
Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of us, I think, in this new age of political discourse came from other areas. I mean, I was never particularly political. I always liked talk radio, but my background was in music radio. I mean, I'm a rock and roller. I did music radio for most of my career, although I started in talk as a producer because that was really the only job I could find out of college. And I always liked listening to it, but, you know, I spent 25 years doing music radio, and it wasn't until I finally decided I had enough of radio and got out of it that Air America started up, and I started listening, and, of course, George Bush was systematically destroying our country, that I got more involved and more interested and more concerned about what was going on.
So you realize that you and I both got inspired by George Bush? Is it?
Yeah, you know, that is. It's really interesting when you look at it. But sometimes, well, they say politics makes strange bedfellows, doesn't it? But one of the things I love about what you're doing is that you approach it, you approach politics and the problems of our country and our world with a sense of humor. Because I think that's what we need. And you know, and I think that's one of the problems that Air America had, at least, you know, they had some flashes of brilliance, but, and a lot of their talent was wonderful, but I think on the management side of things, they didn't approach it as entertainment. They approached it as a political agenda, and that was their first mistake.
Well, I think that what the Republicans have over us is the emotional impact that their audience gets from, you know, when Rush speaks, if that's what you want to call it, he immediately gets a rise out of you, whether it's a good one or, I don't want to go there, or a bad one. Same with Glenn Beck. He immediately evokes emotion, a strong emotion, and that was missing. That's what's missing in a lot of our message, I think, generally with the liberals or just Democratic message in general.
Mm-hmm.
We are really good about talking kind of wonky details, which I'm terrible at, by the way, but they're very good at going into depth, explaining, you know, President Obama is very logical. I happen to love logic, and I think he's terrific at how he explains things, but people doze off. They want to hear simple, emotional messages and then get into details. Hit me between the eyes, win me over, woo me. you know, let's go dating and take me to the mall and take me to some fancy restaurant and then get the candles lit. Oh, I like this. Now explain stuff, you know?
Right. Right. I'm with you. And I'm also, I'm not wonky. I mean, my regular listeners can tell you all the time. It's like I remember reading something, can't quite remember where I read it, and I don't have the exact numbers. I know I can look them up, you know, if I can take a break and get online and find, you know, but I know, you know, I know basic concepts. But the thing is, when I decided that I could do talk radio, and the only reason I decided that is because, number one, I've been doing radio for all of my adult professional life, even though I was playing music on the radio, but mm-hmm. I know how to talk on the microphone. I know how to do the radio. I know radio. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that I'm a fairly intelligent, well-spoken, passionate woman. And I happen to be a single mother, you know, middle age, with a kid, concerned about what has happened to our country. And I think that qualifies me as well as anyone else. And I don't ever approach this as if I have all the answers, because I certainly don't. What I do have are the questions and an insatiable curiosity and anger over the way things have gotten. And I think those are the tools we need. Now, so I bring that. You bring a sense of humor. I mean, I had asked you last week if you knew John Fugelsang, who is a regular...
I wish I knew him. I know his work, yes.
Right.
I wish I knew him. He's wonderful.
He's great. And he's a regular guest on my show because, again, like you... He's very well versed in what's going on. You know, he's got a keen understanding of where we are and who the players are, and a quick sense of humor. And he's able to take the serious issues of the day and address them seriously with a sense of humor. And
well,
I think that's why Jon Stewart is so successful.
Oh well, he can just take a stiletto to anything. But I'd like to address what you just said about sense of humor. And by the way, as you were speaking, I'm nodding and smiling because everything you said, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly. I think the reason, well, there's two things I want to say. I think one thing is the reason people like listening to you or maybe like what I write is I think we're closer to the audience than we are to the people in charge. We speak for the audience because we are them. We're just regular people who have opinions and feel very strongly about things, and it comes out in certain ways. Yours through radio and mine through writing.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, I teach comedy, and comedy creates an intimacy. You make somebody laugh, and immediately you've created a bond with them. And I think that's why people can appreciate sometimes somebody like John Fugelsang or Jon Stewart, because as they're, you know, they're more willing to listen as they're laughing. They've been broken down a little bit. Their defenses are down. They're with them. You know, I'm with you. And that's a way to get somebody to listen.
Right. You're absolutely right. We're speaking with Gotta Laugh. That is the name she goes by online at her blog at thepoliticalcarnival.net. And you can follow her on Twitter at Gotta Laugh, GOTTALAFF. So how long has the Political Carnival been up?
Well, let's see. I've been at it for about a year, I think, or a year and a half. It's been up. I believe that's right. Our archives got eaten up by Blogspot, so
oh, no.
I don't know the original date anymore. But I believe it was I think it was February 2007.
Something.
I'm a terrible interview.
But you're not a terrible interview. No. So I mean, you've been at it for a while now. You know, this is an interesting story past the wire today. According to a new study by the Pew Internet and American Life Project, the Internet has finally surpassed newspapers as a primary way for Americans to get news. That makes the Internet the third most popular news platform behind national and local TV stations, but ahead of national and local newspapers. Interesting, huh?
I'm not surprised. The newspapers have been folding right and left. The LA Times looks like a little comic book now. It's so thin.
Wow.
People are, but now with the internet getting news out there, they're going to start charging. There are sites that will start charging. The New York Times is talking about doing that, which is going to be hard on bloggers, because if we have to keep paying for all our news, you know, several sites. One thing, you get a newspaper. I have one newspaper I subscribe to, and that's the LA Times. I get a lot of my stuff online. I can go to the New York Times, the Washington Post, anywhere I want to go. If they each start charging, then what?
Right, because now what you do is you'll link to their articles. You'll take an excerpt. Do I have that right? And then post the link, and then insert your own commentary there. And it used to be that most of them were fine with that because you put on the link, and it brings people to their site. But most recently, not that I visit much of their content anyway, but News Corp has begun.
Yeah.
Charging for their stuff. And I had Thomas Frank from the Wall Street Journal on. I don't know how he does it. I mean, he's like the only living liberal in News Corp land, it seems. But he's a brilliant writer. And he wrote a great piece last week. And I had him on the show. And I linked to it from my blog. My blog is at radioornot.com. And when people clicked on it, though, it gives you, the first couple of paragraphs and then says if you want to read the rest of it, you have to subscribe. But,
right.
Funny thing, Thomas Frank gave me a trick on how you can actually read the whole thing. He said, if you just Google Thomas Frank, WSJ, and the name of the piece, the very first link it comes up with will give you the whole piece. And sure enough,
really?
It worked. Yes.
Because remember when the New York Times was charging, I couldn't read Frank Rich. I remember
uh-huh.
that. We used to have to find sites that would somehow post excerpts of Frank Rich. Because there was a year where the New York Times charged for their columnists,
yeah,
as I recall.
Right.
And you couldn't. I wonder if that was if you could do the same thing. If I linked directly to Frank Rich, which at that time I wouldn't have thought to do, and then, found some specific thing like you're saying, and would that have popped up, or I think it cut it off at a certain point.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing. I mean, when I did that, I could click on it and read it. But if I used that link to try to post, it would give the same message. So I had to tell the listeners, no, you have to Google, you have to do this search.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's, but I don't know how long, if that will work forever or if it works for everyone or just works for the Wall Street Journal. I don't know. But, I don't know that that's going to work. I think everything is going through a major reset right now. I think charging for content on the internet is going to be tough. And I mean, right now I'm struggling with how I'm going to, get through and try to make my show and my blog and website profitable as I move forward. And I still don't know. I mean, I'm going to try a few different things. But let me ask you this, and if I'm getting too personal, just, go ahead and
do I get to slap you?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we'll have to do it long distance, but yeah. just say, I'm not answering that. But are you able to make a living off of thepoliticalcarnival.net?
Oh, that's so cute that you would ask that, because no.
Yeah. No, I didn't think so. And
no, seriously, there's no way. We're a boutique blog anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We're not on the same order as, say, Huffington Post that is gigantic.
Right.
We have a few ads, and we don't make very much. It's like lunch money. So,
yeah.
No. The answer is no. We get donations every 3 months. We have a fundraiser, and that's just barely enough to have bought Patty a computer.
Uh-huh.
And I use mine to pay bills, and that's it. So,
right.
No.
Right.
I'm sure some people can make a living, but most bloggers eat their Cheetos and sit in their jammies. And I'm only kidding about that, bloggers, because I know we don't really do that.
Oh, I did. I mean, actually, I did before I was like a blogger. I mean, when I was on Air America, I did my show. I've got a home studio. And before I turned this damn camera on, I would be in my pajamas. I would be with my hair up and no makeup. And for some reason, people enjoy the video component, and why they want to see someone talking into a microphone, looking into a camera, is beyond me. But
no,
hey,
it's like a blind date. You want to see who's talking to you on the other end.
But ew, I went out. I was in Los Angeles last week. I was gone for all of, I think, 8 days, and I'm telling you, I gained 10 pounds. All we did was eat. I see it. I mean, I'm looking in this camera, and I see how puffy my face is. It's horrible. So, I shouldn't look at the camera.
No, you should not. I used to hate seeing myself on TV. It
uh-huh.
would drive me absolutely batty. That's one of the reasons I quit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Gotta Laugh is with us. She, again, writes at thepoliticalcarnival.net. Follow her on Twitter. Gotta Laugh is her handle there. And, yeah, a lot of us, we have some ads on the blogs. And, you know, as I get my the podcast up and running, I think I'm going to start a subscription service and do that. You know, and we are open for donations, and the listeners have been wonderful with the donations. And I'm hoping that, you know, if it can pay just the expenses of keeping, you know, the blog up and running. I just put in a new phone line, by the way. So hopefully this will work this time. We tried it out last week and I wasn't having much success. But if anyone wants to call in, I've got a new toll-free number. It's 800-795-1159. 800-795-1159. And, you know, we'll see if it works. If you want to get in on the conversation, please feel free. So gotta laugh. How do you make a living? Because I know you work on your blog constantly. You're updating it all day long. So how do you pay the bills?
Mr. Laffy.
There's
a Mr. Laffy who is, thank goodness, is employed and has been. So that takes care of that. But I also work at a school, although I'm going to get laid off, I just found out. So I'll be at the blog constantly. By the way, the echo is back.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I work with kids who are at a performing arts high school. You fixed it again.
Oh,
thank
good.
You.
Okay. I'm just bringing the volume down. Go ahead.
It's okay. I was making enough to help pay bills, and that it's been wonderful, and I've done that for 13 years. And so I wasn't always at the computer. I'm at the computer more now because they've cut my hours back drastically, and either now or definitely next fall I won't have a job at all anymore, so I'll always be at the computer. But one of the reasons I think blogging works is it's one of the things that teenagers will go to when they won't go to the newspaper or watch TV news. Like, I was trying to get my students to take more interest in current events, and the only thing I could do was to convince them to go to the political carnival. They will not read a newspaper. It's just, it's like poison. It's like kryptonite. And the only news they get is when they walk from their bedrooms to the kitchen and their parents have the TV on, they get a little aroma of news, you know, news whiff.
Right.
Ode to news.
So was it that you taught you're teaching, or you taught, or you're in the process of soon not to be teaching high school?
Yeah, I teach. I had my own comedy class for a few years, and they cut me back, so I just stopped that this year. I had an improv group that I directed that actually was terrific and beat out all the adult groups in competitions, so
wow.
I'm very proud of them. And scene study, and I teach them history, comedy history. I teach them all about all the old comedians from vaudeville to the present. And one of the things I would instill in them is you've got to know what's going on in the world. For a couple of reasons, but one of the reasons that was pertinent was you can't do improv unless you have something to draw from. You can't just get up there and talk about dating all the time or talk about movies or cell phones. You've got to talk about the world. And my improv group succeeded because they're news-oriented. They're up on what's happening. And so when they get suggestions from the audience, they can turn it into something.
That is so a little bit, I can say you're in California. So, first of all, I guess there goes the reason why you're being cut, because the California budget is in such crisis that I mean, I've got a dear friend who is a school teacher in Manhattan Beach. She teaches first grade. And she got into teaching as a second career. She was a radio person, finally gave up on radio, decided to go back to school because she wanted to teach kids. And so she started working in Manhattan Beach just, I think, 2 years ago. And when the budget crisis happened, because the way they work at last hired, first fired. But she's lucky that she's in such a great district as Manhattan Beach. And the parents did a fundraiser and raised enough money to keep she and two other teachers on board to pay their salaries for a year. And
yeah.
So it kept her job. But boy, the schools in California are being hit really hard. And I further imagine that because you're teaching comedy and the arts, which for some reason they consider expendable, you know, that's probably some of the first programs to go. So I'm amazed that you even had that job.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's a performing arts high school, and we have no athletics, so we are the athletics. All the performing classes, dancing and acting are instead of athletics. But since I'm just an artist in residence, I don't have a credential. I was on just a shoestring budget anyway, and once they had to start cutting, I was one of the first things that was going to. I'm surprised I lasted this long, and they still want to keep me and this one other man who helps with tech. But they just don't have the money for it anymore. And as far as fundraising to keep us, which has been brought up, I won't take that money because that money needs to go toward the shows. Our shows need costumes, and they have to pay royalties. And, you know, so I wouldn't take that money anyway. I could just come in and pop in and do a couple of freebies for them and let them keep that money. But it's tough. But what's more important is what the kids are losing. The kids are losing critical thinking skills. I mean, when I come in to teach improv, I think I'm the only you know, person I know of that is an improv teacher for high school kids that teaches comedy. I've never heard of that before. And it's amazing what it does for their minds. It's amazing how it opens them up and how it gets them to process their emotions, to recognize their emotions, to concentrate, to communicate. That's something that you don't learn every day.
Right. So now you were mentioning talking to the kids about the news. And how they're just not interested. You know, I've got a 10, almost 11-year-old, 11 going on 20. She is not quite 11 yet. And one of her assignments every week, she's got to do current events. And so she's got to clip a story out of the newspaper, or she can find it online, but it's got to be a newspaper site. And, you know, as much as she knows how interested I am and what's going on in the world, the stories she's most interested in, you know, the dog who surfs. You know, those are the current event stories she likes to cut out of the paper. So what do you do? How do you get kids interested in what's going on in the world?
Well, we do a pop quiz every so often, and I told them it's an open book one. I mean, I give them notes on comedians, and they have to just pretty much read them back to me after I ask them a question. So the point being that they'll just learn something. They don't have to memorize it. But even then, it's hard to get them to answer correctly. So I tell them, if you come in with a decent current event, a real one, a newsy one, not pop culture, you'll get credit. And so it really worked. It worked, except the first time we tried it, they came in with a lot of Tiger Woods and White House party crasher stories.
Uh-huh.
And so I started asking them specific questions. So I said, tell me what's going on overseas. You know, tell me what's happening. And they couldn't remember where our 30,000 troops were headed. They thought it was Iraq.
Oh, my God.
They didn't know there were troops being deployed. I said, okay, let's try a different topic. Tell me what's happening. There's a lot of this was during the summer, during the Tea Party, Tea Partiers crashing all the town hall meetings. They had no idea what I said, I'll give you a hint. Shots. Flu shots. Oh, they finally got that. And I said, so what's been going on in the news? There's a lot of ruckus going on. And they had no idea about health care, that there was even a debate going on about health care. All the headlines that they were involved in, that they were interested in, were about shootings and violence and, like, the Fort Hood shootings. They just didn't have a clue. And a few of them did because their parents would have NPR on in the car.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's really sad. And is there anything in the in the curriculum that, you know, when I was a kid, civics, I guess, maybe, and it went under the heading of social studies.
Right, I remember.
Is when we were taught about things going on in the world.
Well, they don't have civics classes anymore. But you know, that's why I said to them, do you learn any of this in your other classes? Most of them said no, that it's brought up by some teachers. It depends on the teacher, I guess. But, you know, when I asked them, give me a news story about Obama, one of them raised his hand and said he's president.
Oh, my God.
You know, and so if they're not even learning the basics anywhere, they thought the ads at the bottom of emails and at the bottom of MySpace were news items, the ads. And they interpreted, like, there was an ad encouraging mothers to go back to school, and one kid said that they interpreted that to be that President Obama was forcing parents to get educated.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you, it's so depressing. So I did get them interested with humor. You know, I would make the news into a soap opera, And I'd say, you know, here's what's happening today. See what happens tomorrow. It's like a soap opera. Things happen and people get upset and people cry and people laugh and you never know what's going to happen. And that started getting them going. And then I would throw things at them in improv. And finally, the next quiz, a lot of hands went up, a lot of stories came out, and they were catching on, and it worked.
Hmm. Oh, well, that's encouraging.
It was very encouraging. Too bad I'm not going to be there anymore, huh?
Oh, my. So when did you find this out?
That I wasn't going to be there?
Yeah.
Well, I kind of sniffed it out last year when other people were getting laid off, and I kept getting reassured that I was one that they wanted to stay because I'm kind of valued at that school.
Mm-hmm.
But one day I walked in about 2 weeks ago, and I said, hey, I never got paid for this last semester. And she said, yeah, they screwed up the paperwork, blah, 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 but don't forget about next semester. I said, what are you talking about? And the teacher said, well, they don't know if they're having any of the artists in residence back, and we have a number of them at that school. I said, you're kidding me. If I hadn't asked her, was she going to tell me?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so I went to the principal, and to this day, this was 2 weeks ago, I still don't know if I'm staying until June.
Oh, my goodness.
The district can't seem to answer. So this is, and I'm just an artist in residence. Can you imagine what it's like for a teacher who's been there 25 years who gets laid off?
No, and this is happening more and more. It just shows, you know, our priorities in this country are screwed up. And let's look at the people in, you know, in Congress and what's happening today. I mean, I know at thepoliticalcarnival.net, you've got a video up there today of the bad guy of the day. Jim Bunning. Let's talk about Jim Bunning. Republican.
The guy that flipped everybody off in the elevator. That's
yeah.
Jim Bunning.
Senator Jim Bunning from Kentucky. He
God.
You know, what he's been doing in the last week, is really something that took effect today. He stopped, you know, for millions of people who are collecting unemployment payments
and COBRA.
And well, what happened with COBRA? I mean, my COBRA ran out yesterday, but can I tell you the ultimate irony about this COBRA thing?
Yeah.
COBRA, the government never helped with COBRA until, you know, the economy melted down last September, a year and a half ago, September. I lost my job a week before. Okay. My job at Clear Channel ended August 22nd of 2008. When Obama came in and put this help for people on COBRA in effect, what it did was it helped subsidize. They gave money to people to help pay the COBRA costs because COBRA is very expensive. COBRA, in essence, allowed people to remain on their former employer's health insurance plan by paying the entire cost plus an extra administrative fee on top of it. And it's very expensive. So they put that help into effect for people who were let go as of, I think it was September 8th, 2008. Again, I lost my job August 22nd. So I didn't get any of that help. But regardless, COBRA, you only get access to COBRA for 18 months from the time you lose your job. So my 18 months ended yesterday, the end of February.
Oh, my
God. Yeah. So what ran out on COBRA was this assistance for people who had been laid off and needed help paying those excessive health insurance costs. Because I now am supposedly self-employed because I work, even though I'm not drawing any salary or pay for my work, and I'm self-employed, I'm not eligible for unemployment either because I've got my blog and my radio show going. You know, there are so many things that don't make sense. So this one doesn't affect me one way or the other, but it does affect millions of people who, as of right now, will not get their unemployment benefits or help with their health insurance payments.
And another story popped up right after where he triggered a 21% fee reduction to doctors seeing Medicare patients starting today.
That's right.
Yeah.
And funding for the Department of Transportation because of the stalemate over funding. It leaves 41 critical construction products in limbo and therefore thousands of people without a paycheck because this stopped the extension of the Highway Trust Fund for 30 days, leaving 2,000 federal workers on furlough due to a lack of funds. This is a Republican, Jim Bunning of Kentucky. And let me just play for you Let me see if I can pull this up here. What happened here? Harry Reid is explaining on the floor of the Senate how this has been held up and asks yet again for unanimous consent to move forward on this. And you'll hear at the very end, the lone voice responding to Harry Reid is that of Jim Bunning.
Six times last week, Democrats asked to extend their unemployment benefits for a short time while you work on a longer extension. And six times, Republicans said no. They just didn't say no to us, that is, members of the Senate. They said no to the families in their own states and in all our states who count on us to act when we need action, who count on us to respond in the event of emergency. This is an emergency. The Republicans and the Senate are standing between these families and the help they need while these benefits expire and expired. I hope Republicans will reconsider and think about their constituents standing in the unemployment line as we speak. I hope they reconsider. Based on that, Mr. President, I would ask unanimous consent that the Senate proceed to H.R. 4691, which is a 30-day extension of provisions which expired yesterday. Unemployment insurance, COBRA, which is the health insurance for people out of work, flood insurance, Satellite Home Viewer Act, 1.5 million people today are unable to watch the TV they could last night at midnight. Highway funding, and I've talked about that. SBA business loans, small business provisions, the American Recovery Act, and the doctor's fix, the SGR, and poverty guidelines received from the House and at the desk. That the bill be read three times, passed, motion reconsidered, be laid upon the table.
Is there objection?
I object.
Objection is heard.
Yeah, that was Bunning. I object.
I object.
Unbelievable. So then, shortly after that, a video you have posted up at thepoliticalcarnival.net, Jim Bunning is then going into an elevator, and some producers, some news producers, most specifically a guy from ABC News, is trying to get Bunning to explain. And here's the exchange that took place outside of this elevator. It will blow your mind.
Sir, we just wanted to ask you...
Excuse me, this is a senator-only elevator.
Can I come on the elevator?
No, you may not.
Can you tell us why you're blocking this vote?
I already did. Explained it.
Well, what is the issue? And are you concerned about
Excuse
these people
me.
Who are unemployed?
I've got to go to the floor.
Senator, can you just explain to us why you're holding this up? I'm sure you have an explanation.
Excuse me.
Okay, are you concerned about those that are going to lose their benefits?
And the elevator door closed. Now, somewhere in there, unfortunately, it wasn't captured on the camera, but a few eyewitnesses saw Senator Bunning, I think he's 78 years old, flip these two people off.
He flipped his 78-year-old finger up in the air. How nice of him. I bet that went over really well with America.
Unbelievable. This is...
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Say again?
Excuse me.
Yeah, excuse... No, excuse me. This is a bloggers only blog. You cannot come to my blog, Senator, because I have a bloggers only blog. What is it? What? Does he realize that there are cameras and that they record things and people can then review them and they will be played endlessly and endlessly on every single TV show in the world? What does he expect to accomplish from that kind of behavior? That's what I'm not getting.
I don't get it either. He's obviously a very angry man, but he wants to take it out on the American people?
Yeah. And the poor ABC guy. I mean, the reporters are going to be none too thrilled with him either. And the thanks he'll get for that is the reporting that's going to happen and has already happened because of that. Strike three.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, and the fight goes on. I don't know if you heard that my opening comments about the list for the signees, the people who've signed on to the Bennett letter for the public option vote in the Senate is now up to 30, with Dick Durbin, Patty Murray, Jeff Bingaman, Ben Cardin, and Amy Klobuchar all signing on to this thing. And yet we still have, Robert Gibbs saying, oh, we don't have 50 votes in the Senate. Have you heard this report? And I interviewed, and I'm going to get his name wrong again, Miles Mogadescu, or something like that, who wrote a piece on Huffington Post last week and referenced two New York Times articles from this summer that said the White House cut another one of their secret deals, this time with a for-profit hospital lobby that promised there would be no public option in any final bill, and that might be the reason that there's such resistance from a president who, during the campaign, was all for the public option.
Yeah, that's one of the things that he and I strongly disagree with each other about. I had higher hopes, although I've always known that he was a centrist back from something I read from a 2006 report on him. So I'm not completely surprised at some of the things he's done that disappoint me. But I also heard, though, I believe it was Ezra Klein, although I may be wrong, that said that some of the people who are signing that letter are doing so very reluctantly and really don't have their heart into it and are just sort of doing it for show.
Because they know that it'll never come to a vote because Harry Reid and Obama won't let it come to a vote.
Right, which I really can't see. And I was just also, did a couple of live blogs with Howard Dean, one from Tom Hartman's show and one from, Hardball.
Right.
Where he is staunchly standing behind the public option with hopes that it'll go into Medicare expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not giving up, and he's convinced that that could work. He's convinced that if the House will add on to the bill first and then the Senate, that there's a shot that this could happen.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed. I mean, because I still think we need to force their hand on this one. You know, take a vote. Let's see where they are on this.
I would love to get them up and see where they are. I would love to get the Republicans up one by one on camera. And I would love to also see them actually perform the filibuster duties of getting up and speaking endlessly and letting us all watch them do that.
Oh, you got that right. And those are some of the things that we need, the American people need to see it. And I don't only want to see the Republicans vote and state publicly where they stand on this. I want to see the Democrats do it as well. Speaking of that, you know, we have a new Blanche Lincoln is being primaried.
Mm-hmm. She sure is. In fact, I just got followed on Twitter by now, of course, his name went right out of my head.
Yeah, mine too. And I did as well. And let's see if I can find it. His name is Ben. You know what? I've got it here somewhere. His name is
so bad.
Bill Halter.
Thank
Bill
you.
Halter. He is the lieutenant governor of Arkansas. He showed up. Do you remember when Keith Olbermann helped with our help put together these free medical clinics around the country? I know I put in some money to that.
So
and they did,
I did
one in Arkansas that Bill Clinton refused to go to because he said Keith Olbermann was politicizing it. Excuse me. But Bill Halter showed up. So we'll see what this guy is all about tomorrow night in this very slot, sometime in the 6 o'clock hour. Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny will be with me. Howie Klein is one of the best people to talk about races in every state. I mean, this guy, you and I laugh. He said we're not wonky, and I don't know that Howie Klein is wonky, but boy. He can tell you who's running in what state, from what district, and who's progressive, and who's a blue dog, and he's just the best on that. So he's looking into Bill Halter, and will give us the whole lowdown tomorrow night.
Yeah, I would love to hear more about him. I had barely had time to do any research. I got a couple of sentences on him, and he sounded better than Blanche Lincoln at this point, although I would like to read more and learn more about him.
Yeah, me too. So we'll do that tomorrow. We'll kick off the show with Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny. Gotta laugh. This has been so much fun. This hour just flew by. And I hope we can do it again.
I'd love to.
And I hope people will follow you on Twitter. Again, it's Gotta Laugh, GOTTALAFF. And the website is thepoliticalcarnival.net. It was such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
I'm here. Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll do it again soon.
Okie dokie.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, how much fun is that? See, this is the beautiful thing about the interwebs, you know. I never met her before, but I tell you, we talked a little bit last night knowing that she was going to come on the show tonight, and we just clicked and hit it off. You know, and I really think that we can bring a lot of great people together and build our own little network and conquer the world. Why not? You know, she, I guess, through the internet, I mean, she's good friends with Liz Winstead, I think. And again, I say good friends. For all I know, some people have never met except for online. And there's a right on cue. All right, we're going to get back to the commentary and a few more guests after this. Hold on 1 second. I had this down.
I read the news today.
Because it is that time of the evening. It is time to get a news update and find out what's going on from the Talk Radio News Service. They are at talkradionews.com. And who's on the line tonight?
Well, good evening. It's Victoria Jones.
Hey, Victoria. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
What's going on?
Well, there's various things going on in Washington. Let's start with Senator Jim Bunning of Kentucky.
Perfect timing. We were just talking about him.
Oh, you were? Well, it may not be news to you then, but as you know, the filibuster as it is continues. Once again, he's refused to move on his hold on extending unemployment insurance and other things. As it turns out now, in addition, they had to furlough 2,000 employees of the Department of Transportation today.
Yep.
As a result, there were a large number of construction projects that had to be put on hold, totaling hundreds of millions of dollars throughout the country. Just as an example, in California, the Golden Gate National Recreation Area road construction, nearly $9 million that was. Another one in California, Sequoia National Parks entrance, $15 million. All over the country, these things. And now, of course, it turns out that doctors are having to take a pay cut, 21% fee reduction to doctors seeing Medicare patients starting today. So there are major consequences to this.
Yes, no kidding. And he just doesn't seem to care. I just played the audio of Harry Reid sort of going through the whole, trying to reintroduce the measure and asking for unanimous consent to move forward and Bunning's objection. And then when he was producers tried to question him on it, how at the elevator, how he cut them off and off camera allegedly flipped them the bird. Nice.
Yeah, allegedly flipped them the bird. I haven't seen it myself, I don't know whether that's what he did.
Well, it's not on camera.
He is,
but
an iconoclast, let's put it that way.
Yes.
So he's capable of all kinds of things.
Yeah. I was going to say nice senatorial gentlemanly behavior. Not.
Well, it's certainly interesting times.
Yeah.
We're hearing very interesting reports that Republicans are already planning congressional hearings into several Obama administration policy areas if they win control of the House or Senate or both in November.
Oh, boy.
They're telling the White House Bulletin that one of the things they plan to do is to look into the administration's actions on closing Guantanamo Bay and also Attorney General Eric Holder's bid to hire aides who may have been linked to some of the terror suspects. They also are looking, apparently, at a probe of the president's health care program and whether the White House worked with unions and supportive industry officials in secret to develop its new initiative. But that latter one, I would think it would be difficult for them to investigate because it just makes me think of Dick Cheney's Energy Task Force, and I don't see how you can investigate anything that's done in secret.
Yeah, no kidding. And talk about the pot calling the kettle black, right?
Well, so it's interesting that they're already planning to do these things, and it's so interesting how the Democrats have not done the kind of investigations into the Republicans that they could have done while they've been in the majority, and if they lose the majority, they may come to regret that. Meantime, today was the day when Defense Secretary Robert Gates presented the president with the Nuclear Posture Review. This is a major document which really forms the basis for the president's nuclear strategy for the United States and contains all the options for him. And Gates would have presented all those options this afternoon so that he can address a lot of unresolved issues, many of which are being hotly debated with the administration. apparently the president will permanently reduce America's arsenal by thousands of weapons. He has, however, rejected proposals that the U.S. declare that it would never be the first to use nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, one of the other things that they're trying to figure out is, suppose the U.S. was attacked by chemical or biological weapons, would we consider responding with a nuclear weapon, even if that country did not have a nuclear weapon? So that's the kind of thing that they're going to be looking at and have been looking at today.
Okay.
So that's one of the things the president's doing. Also happening today has been very much on the agenda, education. The president speaking at an America's Promise Alliance event, an organization run by Colin Powell and his wife Alma Powell. And the president saying that they were providing $900 million to turn around America's failing schools, saying one in three kids does not graduate from high school. And they want to help states and school districts turn around their 5,000 lowest performing schools in the next 5 years. Now, the way they're going to do this may not be popular with the teachers' unions. What they want to do is some pretty strong strategies. They want to transform schools from top to bottom by maybe bringing in a new principal, training teachers to use more effective techniques in the classroom, maybe closing a school for a time, reopening it under new management, or even shutting it down entirely, sending students to better schools, replacing a school's principals and at least half of the staff, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So major, major changes to schools are being planned by the Obama administration. Some of the things they're talking about in terms of transformational models, they're saying that schools must address four areas of reform, including developing teacher and school leader effectiveness, implementing comprehensive instructional reform strategies, extending learning and teacher planning time, and creating community-oriented schools, and providing operating flexibility and sustained support. That's the kind of thing that they're looking at doing.
Well, you know, and the other thing is, if I'm understanding it correctly, some of the measures of No Child Left Behind, which the Bush administration obviously put into place but never funded, Obama wants to now fund, wants to make sure that if they're going to do it, that they can actually work.
That's right. They're very much so. They want to fund these things and to make sure that they do work, yes.
All right. Now, didn't Obama also today speak to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
It was this event was at the Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, I see. Okay. But he didn't speak to – they was just using their facility to do this.
That's right. He didn't speak to the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, that's good, because I was thinking enough of the sleeping with the enemy stuff.
He wasn't doing that. He was just in their building.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. All right. Anything else going on today other than all that stuff? And any more news on where we're headed with health care?
Well, Robert Gibbs in the briefing today said that the president probably on Wednesday will give a speech in which he will talk about the way forward in terms of process and substance, taking what he got from the summit on Thursday, areas of agreement that he saw. He felt it was a productive meeting, and what putting that all together in some kind of a document proposal for what he sees as the way forward. He'll be presenting that on Wednesday. Meantime, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, is counting votes to see if she's got 216 votes to vote on whatever it is that they're trying to vote on, whether it's the Senate bill as it stands or something else that's going to come up. And at the moment, in my opinion, it's really tricky for her to get those 216 votes.
Yeah, is it 216 or 217 that she needs now? Oh, it's 216 because Abercrombie retired.
Right.
So it dropped by one more. I see. Yeah, regardless, it's going to be really, really tight. Now that they're down Jack Murtha, they're down Robert Wexler, and now Abercrombie as well, now that it's March 1st.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay. I don't know how these people, how their stomachs hold up. I'd be I'd be ill by now. I already am, but that's besides the point.
Could not do it myself.
No, me either. All right. Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Check them out at talkradionews.com. There's our news update for the night. All right. We're going to try something different here. You know that last week I was in San Diego for a music conference, Michelle Clark's Sunset Sessions. I know it was the week before. I was back here last week, still trying to get my bearings, you know. And at this conference, in addition to enjoying lots of great music, there was, you know, I got to enjoy lots of great people, figuratively speaking, you know what I mean. Some people that I've known for years and, you know, the radio community is a fairly small one. But somebody that I've met at past Sunset Sessions, but never really had the chance to sit down and chat with, I finally got the chance to talk with, as I try to type and read and talk at the same time, is somebody that you may remember. If you are somewhere around my age and you remember when MTV first got going, oh, that one doesn't work. Let's try it like this. See if it's all one word, if that would work. I'm trying to find him on Skype. We're going to see if this works. If not, I'm just going to call him on the regular phone. So if you remember when MTV first got started, they had the original VJs. That doesn't work either. All right. Well, Mark Goodman, you know what? I'm just going to call you by phone. Let's do this. Let's see if this one works. Let's try this as the phone rings. See, one ringy-dingy, and see if he answers. Hello?
Too high tech for me, Nicole.
I know. So I was trying to find your actual Skype ID and couldn't. So, you know, we'll do it the old fashioned way.
That's terrible. I want to be on Skype.
I know. Well, have you figured out what your Skype name is?
I thought it was it.
It didn't work. No.
I don't know.
No.
If you want to text me yours, maybe I'll try and find you. But
Wait. You know what? The first one, dot? You know what? Okay, I'm going to hang up and try it again. This is live radio. It's really good. All right, hold on. We'll hang up and let me try that.
All right.
I'll be right back with you. See, this is great radio. Okay, hold on. Because it's going to sound like he's in the studio if it really works. All right, let's try this one. Search directory. Yeah, there he is. All right, we're going to add contact and make contact. No, I don't want to send a message. I want to call him now. Let's find, is he there? So what happened to him? Oh, God. All right, see, this is why we should have done this earlier today. Okay, search directory again. See, now I have to, all right, add contact, and then send a message, okay me, all right, and send. And then he's, Mark, now you have to accept me, and as soon as he does, he'll be added to my contacts list. And I guess there, is that him? Did it work? not yet. Oh, boy. All right. Oh, there he is. Okay. Hello. Uh-oh.
Hello.
But now we have like an echo feed. We've got like an echo loop going on. Is that coming from your side? Do you have a speaker on? Hold on.
Let's see.
Oh, I see you. You there? Oh, now I got
it. Now I can't hear you, though.
Okay, now, no, because I muted you. I muted me, so we didn't.
No, because I
muted you. See, we've got a
I'm going to hang up your call, Nicole.
Okay, I'm going to hang up my call. So now I hung up my call, and we're not hearing. Who I'm attempting to talk to is Mark Goodman.
Mark Goodman.
Yeah, see, I think it's coming from your end. Mark, see.
I'm sorry for screwing up your show, Nicole.
I do a really good job of it myself every night. Yeah. See, now are you on? Do you have headphones on? Do you have your speakers on?
I don't have headphones on.
Because if you have speakers on, the speakers are coming back through your microphone.
See, but if I mute my speakers, then I don't hear you.
But don't you have headphones?
And I don't see your video either.
No, because I don't have the video on.
So it's kind of your call what you want to do here.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to call you back on the phone because we're going to have to test this out, to do the Skype thing another time. Let me call you back on the phone.
All right.
Okay. All right. So we're going to hang up again. End call. We're going to call Mark Goodman back on the phone. See, you know what? We did have all good intentions. We were gonna do this, test the line earlier today. I think I'm calling. There we go. We were gonna test the line earlier today. hi. Sorry about that. Yeah, we were gonna test the line earlier today. I got stuck in the vet's office with my dog Pooh Bear for a couple of hours, and she's fine. But so I wasn't around. Then when I got home and I called you, you weren't there. Oh, it's the life of, you know, us busy radio people.
And I was so interested in utilizing the internet as opposed to this old school way of doing an interview, you know.
But you know what? We'll do it another time. Here's the thing. The computer that I use to connect on Skype does not have the video camera on it. But I do have the video.
I was watching you.
If you go to radioornot.com.
Yeah, I was watching.
Right. I'm broadcasting from the other computer. See, I've got two computers going. That's how high-tech I am.
Wow.
See, you know, because I do the audio stuff from the PC and the video stuff and the video streaming from the Mac. You know, I'm just so high-tech, it kills me. But, yeah, so anyway.
I did see one message to the right of your picture there. Somebody wants their MTV, even after all these years. Oh, my God. You really don't want your MTV any longer.
Not anymore. Yeah. Well, you know, I guess we could talk about that. I remember you so perfectly, as most people do, from the beginning days of MTV. I was in college in Tampa, and I remembered thinking, oh, my God, this is going to kill radio, just as the song said. But
That's
it certainly didn't. It certainly didn't. And not only that, MTV doesn't play music anymore, does it?
And they probably, you may have heard that they have, just in the last week or two, finally taken the music television words out of the logo.
Oh, no.
Only about 10 or 12 years late, but.
So what do they do now? I mean, the Jersey Shore, that's on MTV, isn't it?
I believe it is.
Uh-huh.
Talk about great programming.
Yes. Well, Mark Goodman is with us.
We have MTV to blame for this whole mess. You know, with the real world is where the whole damn thing began.
Of reality television,
and,
yeah.
You know, they accused us in the beginning of dumbing down America and shortening people's attention spans to 3.5 minutes. And it turns out it wasn't really that did it. It was reality TV that really messed things up.
Yeah, you're right. Although I got to say, those music videos got really, really stupid. I mean, you know what? I love music, and you do
didn't
too.
Didn't they start off stupid?
Yes. Yeah. The music videos were always stupid. I mean, there were some that were pretty creative and interesting. But you know what? If I'm going to watch music, I want to see a band playing music, not just not lip syncing while they're acting out stupid scenarios.
I have to say, we obviously got a lot of heat about that from a lot of people. And there were certain artists who really segued well into the era that you wouldn't have expected. Ray Davies, for example, did a great job of moving into the video age and was great to watch and was clearly comfortable on camera. And then there were others who really just hated it and didn't want to be a part of it. Tom Petty, I know, hates video and yet he's come up with some great ones. But, you know, there's certain bands who I wanted to see them just playing and rocking. I thought that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Someone like Peter Gabriel, who was so amazing, and his videos were art. So I loved what he did.
That's right. Robert Palmer, who straddled the world of music from performer to music journalist, also did some great stuff with video.
I thought, you know, it's funny that you pick him out in particular, because there are those who you know, the addicted to love video, for God's sake. I mean, there's people who point to that and go, it's just salacious. It's just crap. It's just TNA. No,
but you know what? He took the medium and he had fun with it. You know, I mean, if you're going to, but it was a performance. And then, you know, for the guys who wanted the TNA, he did it.
It wound up being, I've always believed, down to what the same thing that is in radio. It's a great song. It's a great song. A great song with a crappy video is still a great song. Mm-hmm. A crappy song with a crappy video is crap all around. A crappy song with a great video is still a crappy song.
You got that right. And it all comes down to the music, which, you know, is one of the reasons why this event that you and I were at last week is so great, because it's a bunch of radio people, and we both have worked in radio long enough to have worked for stations where people don't give a damn about the music. It's all about ratings, and it's about the celebrity of it. And this event was for people who love music. And it wasn't only radio people, but music supervisors. And those are two worlds that you straddle now. Someone just asked in the chat room, what is he doing now? Well, I guess I should say, I mean, I hear you all the time because I have XM in my car. You are on, well, at least one of my favorite XM channels, which is the Spectrum.
But you're also
on a few others. What other channels are you on?
I'm on three channels, and you could guess at least one of them.
Totally
80s.
Right. I don't want to listen to that one often, though.
It's a living, Nicole. It's a living.
Hey, I'm not slamming it. I was going to say, can you get me in over there? I need a job.
I will work on that. You should be on.
Thanks.
I'm serious. You should be on there.
Yep. I'm serious,
somebody
too.
Like your history and your background.
Yeah, I'm serious, too. All right. Well, we can talk off the air about that. So, and you're on one of the classic rock channels also.
I am, and working with some people over there who I worked with, you know, 100 years ago. So,
right,
yeah,
and you're working with, I believe, some people that I worked with 100 years ago, too. You work with Jim Kerr, don't you?
Well, yeah. Well, Jim and I worked together in New York. He did mornings when I was doing evenings at PLJ in New York.
Well, did you know that I worked with Jim Kerr at WPLJ as his producer when I was just a young thing?
You know, I didn't know that.
No.
And I, you know, that was where I knew him. But when
I was there probably after you.
Also, for God's sake, you worked with him at PLJ. I had no idea. I mean, I was only at PLJ for a minute before I went to MTV. But,
right. And I think I was there after you, because I was there after PLJ was no longer rock, when PLJ became Power 95.
Right.
I graduated college, moved to New York, and worked at WMCA producing the Bob Grant Show. I mean, I produced the forerunner to Rush Limbaugh. And it's a funny story how I got to PLJ is that one day he had a guest fill-in host named John LeBoutelier, who was this very right-wing. He now writes for World News Daily or something, one of those very right-wing websites. But he was a congressman in New York, and a crazy right-wing congressman, and he was filling in for Bob Grant, and I get a call in the control room asking if John LeBoutelier was available. I said, no, he's on the air right now, and can I take a message for him? He said, yeah, just let him know Jim Kerr called. I'm like, Jim Kerr, wow, hi. He said, hey, and I forget how it came. So afterwards, I gave John the message, and he said, why, do you listen to him? I said, not really, but I want to work with him. And he introduced us, and within 6 months later, I was over there producing a show and worked there for 3 years till I moved out to Los Angeles.
The rest is rock history, as they say.
You know, as they say. So you went off to MTV, but from there, I mean, how long were you at MTV?
I was at MTV for most of the 80s. I was there. I was actually the first person on the air when MTV debuted in 1981.
Wow.
And I was there. I actually quit in 87 and moved to L.A., and they wanted me to stay, so we did a deal where I lived in L.A., but I commuted back every month and did a week of shows. So I was doing that through 88 and then through 89 and most of 89. I was doing things in LA for MTV, hosting press conferences, doing interviews, those kinds of things. I would continue to do some things for them here and there, and then I was probably pushing it even at that point. I was just too old, you know. And I mean, I wasn't fired. I quit, but I quit really because of the change, even at that time, that was happening at MTV. You know, I think like you and probably a lot of other people that we know and who were at this gathering that you were talking about. I love music, and I always wanted to be at a place where I felt like music was going to grow, and that was going to be the next place that you'd look for what was going to be happening next, not what was happening 6 months or a year or 5 or 10 years ago. And I didn't feel like that was happening at MTV, and Kurt Loder was coming in, and I knew mm-hmm. that he was going to get to do a lot of the things that I had been doing. You know, I got to go off and do some of the most amazing interviews of my life there, some amazing experiences. And MTV, people may remember that the fans loved us, the press. And when I say us, I mean the five of us on the air. The mm-hmm. fans loved us. The press hated us.
Yeah.
And so the MTV wanted the credibility of print journalism, and that's why they hired Kurt Loder. And so Kurt got to come in and do all the things that we now know that he did. And he's, you know, Kurt's, you know, certainly knows his stuff. I'm not dissing the guy at all. But he never, from day one through to today, and I think he's still on, he never made great television. And that's part of it.
Right.
You have to be able to make great TV in addition to just being, you know, scholastic about the music.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I wanted to be able to do, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to, and sure enough, I wasn't.
All right. Well, Mark Goodman is with us, and so, you know, it's interesting. There are all these similarities, and our paths have crossed so much. You know, I'm sitting in the studio, and you're watching on the video, and I'm going to try to move the camera. I've got this big banner behind me, a framed thing on the wall behind me. Can you see it?
Now, 101.9.
Right? Now, see, but
I was there first.
You were there first. Now, I got to say, KSCA, which is the call letters when I was there, still has this this reputation, and rightly so, of being a great legendary radio station, and it was. I mean, and I look back on my career, I would say for me personally, that was the most rewarding time of my life career-wise. Those 2.5 years were just, I was in career heaven.
And you made it last longer than we did.
Well, but you know, it wasn't your fault, and it wasn't through my, you know,
Gene Autry's damn fault for us.
Exactly. And for us too. So, well, I moved to LA. I wound up from 90 to 94 producing the Mark and Brian Show, which at the time ruled the LA airwaves. Now talk about success. I've never had more success than I did during that time. We were the number one morning show. We beat Rick Dees. It was before Howard Stern took them down. It was pretty amazing. Just, I've never worked for something that huge before. But when I wasn't working, what I was listening to was The Edge, which was also at 101.9, owned by Gene Autry. And it was you and J.J. Jackson was there.
It was my boss.
It was great. It was great radio. And I remember the night you guys went off the air. I remember where I was living. I was living in this little apartment in Santa Monica. It was your final night. I was recording it on cassette tapes. And you had a night guy on. What was his name? Who I loved. He was one of my favorites.
We had John, I think John Logic. Is that who
John Logic. What a brilliant jock he was.
He was a brilliant guy.
I never met him. I just know I really enjoyed listening to him.
He was a fascinating guy, and he was kind of like, you know, he should have been in Devo or something.
Uh-huh.
He was just sort of an out there genius. And I mean, if there's people who are listening now to us in the LA area, hopefully there's a few people who do remember the station. And we definitely tried to do what you wound up doing a bit more successfully a few years later. You know, they put in, after us, they put in K-Lite.
Yeah, well, K-Lite, which when we replaced, you know, they had a station called K-Lite, and they made the call letters K-L-I-T. And when we got there, you know, we were like, really? Clit? I mean, your pleasure button on the dial? We couldn't believe those were actually the call letters, and nobody was having fun with it. But yeah, sorry, I digress. So yeah, but
we were all laughing about it. We were that night, and I have to imagine that everybody, because I don't want this to be a sort of you and I reminiscing while people are sort of listening to us and things, and not if somebody's listening in Minneapolis, where they give a crap about our radio station,
right?
You know,
right.
I have to imagine that everybody has had some sort of experience with radio. If you're music lovers, you've had some sort of experience with your radio station in town that you loved, either going off the air like has happened to Nicole and I both, or has changed format and gone to some sort of disgusting hits format.
Or gone, you know, Spanish, as has happened with me twice. Yes.
So, I mean, and not that there's anything wrong with Hispanic, and that station, maybe now, is it still the number one station?
No,
in the
it has finally fallen off, and it's in the middle of the pack now. But, you know, after KSCA, after 101.9, I wound up down in San Diego for a little while, then came back at Channel 103.1, which attempted to do a similar thing, but not quite as adventurous or, you know, it was clear channelized.
Right.
And but then that one, a couple of years later, was sold and went Spanish, too. So I sort of had the curse. But you know what? There's news for our friends in Los Angeles today that KCSN, the public station at Cal State Northridge, has gone full-time AAA as of 10 o'clock this morning.
What's their coverage like?
I don't know, but I'm certainly going to look into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's
so
funny. You know, I'm reading the chat along the side here as I watch you on camera.
Yes. Well, the chat's very, great.
Funny,
yes.
Funny. Very funny things about KLIT.
Yes.
And talking about people. Somebody actually remembers that Rosie O'Donnell used to be on VH1.
Wow. Well, you know, it's funny because John Fugelsang is a regular guest of mine on this show on most Thursday nights. And he, you know, he was on VH1 for a long time. And so he and I always get into these great musical discussions because in addition to his political astuteness, and he's a great political comic, he's a music nut like I am. So
yeah.
He's a lot of fun. So the other, someone's asking, what does AAA mean? That's the format that you hear. And in fact, the station that Mark works on at the Spectrum on Sirius XM is AAA, and it stands for Adult Album Alternative, which doesn't really mean anything other than the way I used to describe it is, you know, it's good rock and roll. It's rock and roll without the noise.
It's rock and roll for grown-ups.
Yeah, rock and roll for grown-ups. That's a great way to describe it.
That doesn't mean it doesn't rock. That doesn't mean that there's not times when it's loud.
Yep.
But it also means that there is some substance there, and there's stuff that like Corey Chisel and the Wandering Sons that were playing like crazy on the Spectrum, who they could be somebody who came out in 1967. You know, it's that kind of vibe. It's just I think a format for a big segment of the populace. The difficulty with the format is that we don't get hits.
Right.
And
well,
we need hits.
Oh, real at the Spectrum? That's a shame because I listen to it all the time. I also love The Loft, and The Loft is a bit more eclectic even than Spectrum.
Yeah,
the problem is,
songwriter.
Yeah, with the Spectrum, you know, and the format as in general breaks new music. I mean, I came back last week and played a whole lot of music on the air here, on the show of bands that we heard there because they break first. I mean, I've got if you go way back in my archives at RadioOrNot.com, you'll hear some old interviews of mine. I did the very first LA radio interview with Dave Matthews back in 1992, 93. You know, Sheryl Crow, we were first on. Ben Harper, I mean, you name it. All these bands that have broken through started at AAA. And people like to hear songs that they know, that they've heard a million times. And so, unfortunately, they'll complain and say, I don't want to hear the same stuff over and over again, yet the stations that get the highest ratings are the ones that play the same songs over and over again. So while,
right.
You know, AAA tends to step out early and pave the way for these artists to help the other stations be successful. You know, so that's
the difficult thing that we, well, as you say, this format and these radio stations and they're at this gathering that you and I, you've been going far longer than I, but that you and I now go to every year. There are stations that they jump on these artists and they really support these artists, and the artists know it, and the artists support the radio stations back. But generally, the industry and the country at large doesn't really know it, because we do it, we break them, we get people familiar, and then the big hit station in town, or even the rock station in town, will pick them up.
Right.
And they get the credit for breaking the artist.
Exactly. And as evidenced by, say, Melissa Etheridge and Jason Mraz, who both came really as a thank you to these stations for giving them a chance back way back then. And you even said, Melissa Etheridge, back when you first played her on The Edge, the station we talked about, at that time,
yeah,
I happened to be a KNX FM, and we played her probably a week after you did. But you know, we played her that early on, and AAA played her from the first album and still does. Jason Mraz played, AAA Radio played Jason Mraz's first record, which Top 40 and Hot AC and these other formats never touched. And yet, you know, they take credit for him now. But that's the reason he played this conference.
But at least there are people out there who are pushing this format. And there are, I think that the format seems to have grown over the last, you know, 10 years since you were doing it in L.A. and since I was. I mean, that station that I was doing was 89.
Yeah,
that's what we were doing.
Wow.
That. And it was, I think that the idea really worked for people who do care about music. Look, you know, I have a kid, you have a kid, you know, my daughter's 17.
And gorgeous, by the way.
On the spectrum. I'm sorry?
And gorgeous, by the way.
Nice of you to say, and talented.
Yeah? Okay.
But she listens to me on the spectrum, but there's only a few things that she really likes. And what does she listen to most? On Sirius XM, she listens to Hits 1.
Wow.
And that's because that's her sensibility. And that's the crap that's shortening people's attention spans. It wasn't MTV.
Yeah. No, I gotcha. Now, Mark Goodman is with us. But you also do other things. Now, in addition to your radio stuff at Sirius XM, you also work as a music supervisor.
That was why I started to go to this gathering that we've been talking about. I was invited by Michelle Clark to go down there because I was music souping for, actually, I did the first two seasons of Desperate Housewives.
How much fun is that?
It was a fair amount of fun. It was less fun than you would imagine.
Yeah, because it's a lot of busy work doing the clearances, right? Getting the, you know,
well,
is that what
there's
it is?
Some key reasons. And that particular show, which, especially in the first two seasons, I absolutely adored. I saw the pilot and was just flipping out at how cool this show was. But Mark Cherry, the creator of the show and the writer who wrote the pilot and co-wrote a lot of the early episodes, he loves music, by the way, this guy. But he would not want lyric over his dialogue in any scene. In addition to that, unlike, for example, Alex Passavis, who is a music supervisor on Grey's Anatomy, is probably the best-known example in what she did with The Fray. I mean, she puts music all the way through that, and people will be singing, and people will be talking through the scene.
Yeah.
Mark Cherry would never allow that with SO, and he didn't want current songs. He specifically did not want that because he wanted his shows to be evergreen.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted his shows to not be locked into a moment in time. So when I, for example, you know, Rihanna didn't have a record out, and I got 4 or 5 months before Ponder Replay came out. I loved that song. Look, she's gone weird now, but I got that for a great scene with Eva Longoria's character. She was going to have this huge party. I thought, this is great. This is the perfect thing. And he wouldn't put it in. And that happened with several artists. And you go to the soundstage and you play them your ideas to the producer. In TV, it's the producer who makes this decision, as opposed to in film, it's the director. And it really is completely subjective. And, you know, we would get shot down consistently when we would do things like that. It was just, that was what made it very difficult. And then in addition, in television, oftentimes you have to do your own clearances. And
yeah.
85 to 90% of the job is paper chase and negotiating. And, you know, I actually got, I used the Stevie Wonder song in one of the episodes. And those people were so nice that I wound up getting the song for, and it was like, Isn't She Lovely, I think I used. And And I wound up getting the song all in for like 10 grand, which is just insane. You know, whereas Janet Jackson at one point wanted like $250,000 for a song.
Yeah, see, that's
like
not the fun part. It's, you know, figuring what song would go great in what scene. And that's the, you know, the sexy part most people would think about when they think about the job of a music supervisor. So are you doing that anymore?
I'm not doing it as much. I'm in New York now, and it's hard for me to find some work here. I actually was talking with some people. Savitz was not at the convention this year, and I wanted to talk to her a little bit more about doing some film work here. And Tracy McKnight, who has done a lot of cool indie films, was there, and I've been pointed towards some indie people in New York. That's really the only way for me to go. But I have to say, The creative part of it does still exist, but like every job and every walk of life, everybody's budgets are cut. Everybody's making less money. Mm-hmm. So, that, for example, some of my friends who are music soups who were there this year, who are working on indie films, one friend of mine who does like Criminal Minds and some other television shows, he's working on an indie film. So that means that in essence, he's going to put in nearly a year of work finding songs. Maybe he'll need to find 20 positions in a film for music. So, and there's a year of work there, and he'll make $20,000.
Right, right. Yeah, I did one before I left L.A. I did one indie film, and it was so much fun. But I didn't do the clearance part. I just did the creative part. And we all we got were festival clearances. So we put in every, I mean, it was so good. And I'm in the IMDb because of it. It was a movie called Roadkill, which is wonderfully campy black comedy about a hitman. And I have a lot of the rough cuts. And then I found it on Amazon years later. And I ordered it, and it had none of our music in it. So it was very sad because obviously it was too expensive. They couldn't get it.
I was just going to say that's not a commentary on you.
No.
It's that they couldn't pay the money.
Yeah, that's it.
And by the way, the same thing happens with Desperate Housewives, I know, it happened in a couple of positions. We were under strict orders to get worldwide clearance in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't always get that, and when it came to time for them to put out the DVD collections of the seasons, you know, there's stuff in there that we had put in that was songs that we edited like crazy around so the vocals weren't stepping on the dialogue,
right.
And they were gone.
Aww.
The songs were gone.
All your hard work.
Some lame, you know, music library thing that costs like $2,000 in its place.
Yeah. Oh. Mark Goodman, you know
what?
As often happens when I have people on the show, the time just goes by too fast. Because I want to talk to you about other things. And so what I want to do is talk to you off the air.
Can we do it again on another night?
Yes.
Like Skype work?
Yes. We're gonna connect during the day when we're not on the air, and we're going to figure out the Skype issue and get it going. And we'll talk about all kinds of things and take phone calls and have fun.
I would love to do that because the reason that this happened was because you and I were talking about Obama and we were talking about politics and we were talking about things that, frankly, when I make even the slightest comment in the direction of, no matter whether it's a liberal comment or a right-wing comment, it doesn't matter. Whatever I say, I get tons of crap from the serious listeners. Shut up and play the music.
Right.
Well,
because no matter what you say, you're going to offend some portion of the audience.
Buddy,
and so you have to be
buddy.
Totally apolitical. But here, we can get as political as we want.
And, I believe that there's a lot of people who are interested. Look, I'm not going to go on, especially in that situation on Sirius. I'm not going to go on for even a minute about politics. That's not my job there.
Mm-hmm.
But we all live in the same world, and we're all affected by it, and it's important to me. And that's why the whole thing is scary because people are so rabid about it. Hey, I'm just a guy. I'm just talking, you know. And if I feel good about something or bad about something, my opinion is no more or less important than yours.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just feel like, you know, all of the stuff that you, I'm sure, talk about night after night after night here in terms of the disgusting state of Congress and partisan politics and how about getting the job done for the people and just shut the hell up about, you know, this deal or that deal. Let's just get yep. health care through. Come on. You know?
Yep. Well, we will do that. And we're going to, we'll get together one day this week and we'll figure out the Skype issues and we'll come back on and talk about things that are happening now that everybody knows where you've been and what you're up to. And so we've broken that ice and now, and you know, next time we'll talk about stuff in the world.
I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Mark Goodman, I'm only going to cut you off now because I need to check in with Brad. I was going to say Brad Goodman, Brad Friedman of the Brad blog. Because have you been following this whole thing about Acorn and the people who supposedly dressed up as a hooker and a pimp and went into the Acorn
yeah.
offices? Well, do you know that whole thing was bunk, that the guy was not dressed as a pimp? The whole thing was a setup. And the New York Times was presented with the facts, and they wouldn't correct it?
I'm going to stop championing the New York Times.
It is unbelievable. So I got to get Brad.
The old gray lady is not so great anymore.
Yeah, no kidding. So I because we've been following the story all along, so I got to get the final update on that and let people know what went on there. But Mark Goodman, it is always great to talk to you, and I'm glad finally this time we got to connect, and we're going to keep this conversation going.
Thanks, Nicole.
Okay, we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Mark Goodman, and again, if you've got Sirius XM, listen to the Spectrum. That really is my kind of music. It is, you know, when because some days you got to get away from the political stuff, and you need to listen to music because music does soothe the savage beast. It does. When I get really angry at what's going on in the world, sometimes I need to tune out. But the Spectrum, great music and good people like Mark Goodman working there. All right. We're calling Brad Friedman now from Brad Blog.
You got him.
Hey, that was quick. All right, it is Nicole calling. And
hey, Nicole.
Hi. And so Brad Friedman is the guy behind Brad Blog. And if you were listening, now it wasn't last week, it was the week before when I filled in for Randy Rhodes. And even before that, I've been speaking with Brad Friedman often about this whole James O'Keefe, Andrew Breitbart, Acorn fake bull crap. And let's just do a quick setup for those who didn't hear the ongoing soap opera. Because you did such a great job covering the story from day one, and the way it's been unfolding has been better than any soap opera or reality TV show out there. So
it's really amazing to watch, isn't it? I'll try to give you the quickest wrap here. Obviously, the Republicans have been out after Acorn for years,
yep.
Largely because they, you know, register legally millions of low and middle income voters who tend to vote Democratic. And folks are probably aware of these Acorn, these hit videos that came out last year, the supposed pimp and prostitute with James O'Keefe and Hannah Giles going into Acorn offices. Well, as it turns out, James O'Keefe never actually went in as a pimp. He was never dressed in that 70s blaxploitation outfit that so many people saw splashed across not just Fox News, but, you know, CNN,
everywhere.
MSNBC, everywhere, yeah. And the New York Times and all the rest of them picked up what is a completely phony story. He never wore that outfit. He represented himself as this girl's boyfriend, a conservative college student considering a run for Congress someday, and they were trying to save her from an abusive pimp. But you would only know that, of course, if you bothered to read the text transcripts for these videos, because the videos themselves were just so deceptively edited. And as a matter of fact, back in December of last year, the former Massachusetts Attorney General Scott Harshbarger found that the tapes had been highly edited, substantially overdubbed, to the point where you didn't even know what questions the Acorn employees were answering to. And so I've been trying to call on the New York Times in particular to retract their incorrect reporting over and over and over, and have run into an extraordinary wall, first with the senior editor for Standards over there, Greg Brock, who said no correction was necessary because James O'Keefe went on to Fox News in that pimp costume and said that that's exactly what he wore in the offices, and therefore, quote, we believe him. And this was followed up then by the public editor, Clark Hoyt, who was supposed to be the reader's representative. He's the ombudsman there.
Mm-hmm.
And neither would he recommend a correction, even though he told me, well, there's all of this evidence that they appeared in, he appeared in the costume, et cetera, which piece by piece I had to go through and disabuse him of, because he was completely wrong. Eventually, Hannah Giles, the fake prostitute, as well as Andrew Breitbart, admitted that, in fact, all of that pimp nonsense was stuff
bunk
that was added on later, was what they call B-roll. It was completely put in. It was phony in order to, you know, help sell the story. It was, you know, quite an eye-popping piece of video, this guy running around, this skinny little 25-year-old white kid running around in a, you know, fedora hat and fur cape and
yep,
walking stick. But the whole thing was phony. And now today, at Brad Blog, we got a bit of breaking news across the afternoon today. This morning we started off with some, I think, rather extraordinary video of Andrew Breitbart. He's the guy who published these videos. He's the guy who lied about them from the jump in his own Washington Times column.
Right, and wasn't James O'Keefe actually working for Breitbart, like on his payroll?
He still does, yeah, even though O'Keefe has now been arrested on a federal felony charge trying to manipulate the phones down in Louisiana of a Democratic U.S. Senator, Mary Landrieu. He is still on contract with Breitbart, incredibly enough, and, you know, which is somewhat ironic given that they have said that, you know, Acorn is a criminal organization based on what a handful of employees have done. Well, if that's true, then I guess Andrew Breitbart Media Empire is a criminal organization,
mm-hmm,
given that one of their top employees is currently facing federal felony charges,
right,
down there in Louisiana.
Right.
So he, we got the video. Mike Stark of Stark Reports, who does video on Capitol Hill, was able to corner Breitbart at the CPAC convention a week or so ago, got him down in the basement all by himself, and really put the screws to him on this whole phony Acorn pimp story. And Breitbart's, you know, comments were, I thought, extraordinary. He's manic. He's, you know, looks like a crazy man. He keeps comparing it to Borat. Mind you, this after he has said that, you know, oh, this is real journalism going on. Now he's saying, oh, it's just like Borat when
oh
we dress
God
people up. And it was crazy. Well, you got to watch the video. We got it at bradblog.com. It's also at starkreports.com. It's amazing footage, and he makes amazing admissions in there where he says, in fact, that he claims now that even he didn't know that
oh
O'Keefe wasn't dressed as a pimp.
Yeah, right. And I've got some swampland not too far from here that you can build lovely homes on.
Well, look, it is possible that O'Keefe lied to
yeah
him as well. But, you know, as the publisher of these things, it is up
it doesn't
to him
matter
and his due diligence
mm-hmm
to make sure he knows what he's publishing. And he claims, you know, that he looked at the raw, unedited video, the video that they won't release to anybody. They'll only release the doctored videos. Well, if he really did look at the raw, unedited video, he would know, in fact, that O'Keefe did not, you know, dress as a pimp. So it's hard to tell when exactly Breitbart is or was lying, but we know either way he's either a liar or he's been he's committed, as James O'Keefe likes to call it, journalistic malpractice.
Well, not only that. So Brad Friedman is with us from
yeah
bradblog.com. Now, what is the latest on the New York Times? Have they finally admitted that they screwed up? I mean, just because James O'Keefe appeared on Fox News and said that he walked into the Acorn offices in his pimp garb doesn't make it factually true.
No, and it's actually completely false, and I've proved that to them, you know, time and again, and of course all of the players now admit as much, and yet the New York Times refuses at this point still to issue a correction. One of the most unbelievable moments in, and we've got all of the emails between myself and Clark Hoyt, their public,
which are hysterical. I mean, it's sad, funny, but you can't believe you're reading this stuff, that this back and forth actually happened.
Yeah, he actually tried to explain why a recent story, January 30th story, did not require a correction. The story itself had said that James O'Keefe made his biggest national splash last year when he dressed as a pimp and trained his secret cameras on Acorn employees.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason the New York Times is standing by that story is because, as Hoyt explained, it says that he dressed as a pimp and trained his camera on Acorn employees. It doesn't say he did that at the same time.
Oh, my God.
This is the paper of record we're talking about here. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I saw one commenter, and folks, you know, across the Internet have been decrying this. Brad DeLong has said that, Clark Hoyt needs to go. He needs to be fired, that this is outrageous. I saw, and I think I can say this now since you're on the Internet here. This would be the equivalent of saying that Barack Obama welcomed religious leaders into the Oval Office today and pulled down his pants and took a dump.
Yeah, it is actually technically accurate. Right.
That's accurate. I read it in the New York Times exactly like that. Mm-hmm. I see no reason why they should make a correction.
Oh,
now, we've got some late breaking news here this afternoon. Just in, before coming on air tonight, from the Brooklyn DA's office, wrapping up a five-month investigation into those videotapes, into those Brooklyn Acorn videotapes.
Yep.
The DA has found no criminal wrongdoing, no criminality found in his investigation, and as I've been saying all along, a law enforcement source tells the New York Daily News that, in fact, O'Keefe edited the video. This is a quote.
Yep.
Edited the video to meet their agenda.
Gee, why am I not surprised? You know, I did an in-depth interview with Bertha Lewis, the CEO of Acorn, when I was still on Air America. And, you know, these people do great work, and they were targeted by the Republicans simply because they register low-income, many African-Americans, people to vote, who traditionally vote Democratic. And that's why they were targeted and made out to be the villains. And yet Acorn is and continues to be a wonderful organization. And it's amazing that this country allowed them to be smeared the way they'd been smeared. And Andrew O'Keefe, I hope, gets thrown in jail and they bury the key somewhere where he never gets out. Because, you know what, those are the kind of young people we don't need running around this country right now.
I mean, what they have done, and it's actually James O'Keefe, although I'm delighted to see both of them.
Both of them.
So that's not a problem. I mean, what they have done, Mike Stark talked about in his report today with the video that we released, a shocking video, frankly, of Breitbart. You know, the real crime here, the fact that Democrats went along with this, that the organization was federally defunded, at least until a federal judge stopped it because it was unconstitutional. But these are people who help hundreds of thousands of Americans who are in the most need in this country. And effectively, you know, they have been just wiped out by this political partisan campaign. And incredibly, the New York Times, Clark Hoyt, actually accused me, the Brad blog, of having a political agenda on par with O'Keefe's and Breitbart's.
Oh, God.
I guess my political agenda is that, I think, you know, we ought to tell the truth in the newspaper, like the paper of record, the New York Times. This is apparently now a political agenda, Nicole, to, you know, fight for, you know, correcting stories that have been exceedingly damaging to the folks in our country who can least afford it. It's an astounding story, and I suspect it will continue at bradblog.com in the days ahead, I ain't going to let it go until there's some damn justice here for somebody.
Good for you. Brad, thanks for the great reporting you're doing on this and for coming on and bringing us up to date on this. It is mind-boggling, and we just have to keep speaking truth to power. That's all we can keep doing.
Thank you, Nicole, and thank you, by the way, for covering it, both on Randy's show and your own. I wish more folks out there in the progressive media would yell and scream holy hell about this, because it's going to happen again and again and again on issues that are important to progressives. And if the mainstream media is going to fall for it, then we are cooked.
You got it, and we'll keep doing it. And bradblog.com, Brad Friedman, thank you so much.
Thanks, Nicole.
Okay, bye. You know, what's really funny is if you're listening to the audio stream of this show, that is made possible through the people at Talk Radio 1, talkradio1.com, Mark Germain. And a very quick story before I sign off. Mark does a show. He's on weeknights from, I think it's 11 p.m. He's on 8 to 10 Pacific time. 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific time at talkradio1.com. And back even before I was on Air America, I was a guest on Mark's show. It was during the primary season. This is how long ago it was. And Mark had wanted me to come on and debate this guy, a right-wing blogger named Andrew Breitbart. Go figure. We got into the nastiest conversation. It wasn't a conversation. It was an argument. And being that it's on the internet and Mark allows off-color language on his show, I have never been so angry in my life. And the anger came from the fact that I can have a great debate with somebody who's coming at me with facts and with intelligence. But I was talking to a guy who was so nasty, so mean-spirited, so ill-informed, and just outright lied that I went crazy. So tonight I'm going to find the audio. I've referred to it on the show before, but I'm going to find the link to the podcast of that appearance on Mark Germain's show at talkradio1.com, and I'll link to it from my blog at radioornot.com, so you can hear what this guy Andrew Breitbart is all about. He is bad, bad, bad news. All right. Boy, this 2 hours just flew by tonight. Thank you to Gotta Laugh. Visit thepoliticalcarnival.net and follow her on Twitter at Gotta Laugh, GOTTALAFF.com. Thanks to the Talk Radio News Service, to the wonderful Mark Goodman. Listen to him at SiriusXM Spectrum, especially because that's the channel I like, and to Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. All right. We're going to not take a break. We're done for the night. I will have the video posted shortly, the podcast up not too long after that. We'll be back here again tomorrow night. Howie Klein of downwithtyranny.com will kick off the show with us and tell us about the guy who is taking on Blanche Lincoln in the primary for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senator from Arkansas tomorrow. As much as I dislike Blanche Lincoln, I want to know about this guy, Bill Harder, I think is his name. And we'll find out all about him tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Eastern, from Howie Klein, right here. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thank you for listening, radio or not. Have a great night. Bye.